Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Saturday Morning Tech Show. My name is Todd Cochran. I want to welcome you. Of course, we want to welcome Jeffrey Powers up on top from geekazine.com. Good morning, Jeffrey. How are you doing this morning? Well, of course, it's just getting into lunchtime, your area.
Yeah, I've been up for a few hours myself, but everything's going good. It's nice and clear. Of course, got the air conditioning on, so I'm all happy.
Outstanding. Of course, we got Rob Greenlee down on the bottom on the Rob. I was mentioning just before we got started on the show that it was actually bright, and you said you've got sun in Seattle. So is this like your 3 days of sun for the year?
Yeah, exactly. This is our hot streak here in the next couple of days. It's going to be close to 90 degrees here.
Woohoo! Ooh, wow. That's funny, you know, because it's always in the morning here, about mid 70s, and then in the afternoon mid 80s.
So Todd, I think we should probably rename this show to be the Weather Report Podcast.
Absolutely, because we seem like we do that every time we check in the morning. But good morning, guys, and thanks for joining me. I was late on the draw last week, and Rob, I know you had a family reunion. Jeffrey was busy, Andy was busy, and I really, last week was just, whew.
lots of
what
stuff
happens
going
when
on?
You do it on Saturday.
Yeah, it was lots of stuff going on, so I just went solo on Saturday last week, which was kind of interesting. It was a pretty short show talking to myself but anyway, got it knocked out and got done. But of course, I want to remind everyone to definitely check Jeffrey's show out over at geekazine.com. Lots of great content over there. Lots of great shows. iPad 365. That's your newest one. It's doing well. And of course, you still don't have your How to Podcast or whatever that site is, Jeffrey, up on there. I've been trying to find a link. I can never find it on the site. So you're going to have to get that in there so you can get some SEO off that thing.
For the what?
For your podcast show, your training show.
Oh, the feeds. Yeah.
Yes. I don't see the link to it. But anyway, it's I know you're doing a how, what's it called? What's the domain?
Oh, the new website is called howtorecordpodcasts.com.
Oh, there you go. howtorecordpodcasts.com. And of course, Robbie.
Pretty descriptive. I think that says it all, doesn't it?
It does. Pretty much. Yeah.
It does. So, Rob, you're over at robgreenlee.com.
Yep.
So, well, I tell you, hey, of course, today's show is sponsored in part by my good friends over at Citrix GoToMeeting. And I'm going to tell you, this is a product that I use on a daily basis and really during the summer months. You know, we're all on different schedules. Saturday was proof in the pudding. People on vacations enjoying stuff and, you know, vacation days, shorter working remote, you name it. So meeting really with clients and colleagues in person is at times can be pretty hard. And being here in Hawaii, it's even more difficult. I'm glad to have been home for about a month right now. And I've been using GoToMeeting extensively. So, you know, that's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces. And matter of fact, last Saturday, Jeffrey and I was doing a Saturday morning tech and Jeffrey was doing his part of the presentation, and I, like I said, I'd had such a big week last week that we didn't have the screen up where the audience could see the our faces. But I started doing like touch and goes, and Jeffrey was like, and you know, they kind of brought me back, and he could tell I wasn't paying attention. So it was kind of funny. It's not a way to start off a day, but you know, it lets you meet face to face no matter where you're at. And with GoToMeeting by Citrix, it takes just a webcam and a click to collaborate in a group HD video. You can even join from an iPad. And what's great is you can get up to six people total in the actual HD Faces part. Of course, you can take the a lot more people can join the meeting. I think up to 28 people can join the meeting, so you can have a big crowd in. But the best part is seeing attendees eye to eye, and you obviously feel connected when you're doing so. iPad users, you can join just by basically clicking the invite link, and you can see the people on the screen as well. So just download the free GoToMeeting app to join. So a listener of this show, you can try GoToMeeting for 30 days. And here's the best part. It's free. You get a 30-day trial, and And it's absolutely fantastic. You can go over to gotomeeting.com, click on the try it free button, and use the promo code podcast. Again, be sure to use the promo code podcast when you're over there. And we want to thank GoToMeeting for being a sponsor here at Saturday Morning Tech Show. Well, guys, lots of stuff in the news. Rob, we got some stuff to talk about. Microsoft, of course, I saw some news earlier in the week, but I want to start off this week with this patent battle and this lawsuit and this trial that's going on right now between Samsung and Apple, and lots of revelations coming up. They're having to show their cards and, you know, the pre-designs and marketing surveys, and of course Samsung's releasing stuff that the judge said they couldn't. And so, you know, I don't know if you guys have been watching this during the week, but what's your guys' take on this this battle? Here's another. And also, don't they supply parts to Apple? So on one hand, you've got them suing them because of their product looks almost the same, and then on the other hand, they're still buying products from them to put in the devices. It's kind of stupid.
It's nothing,
isn't
personal.
It? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the Titan battle of the ages here. I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this turns out. But it is really kind of lots of meat for the tech journalists to chew into, right? They can see all these mock-ups and all these things going on. And so it's basically a lot of fodder for the technology space to banter about stuff.
You know, you think about the effort going forth here, and link up, and you know, you look at the two devices in question, ooh, they look a lot alike. They're rectangle, and they have a screen, and what else? Oh, they got items there you can tap to execute. You know, come on, you know, certain, it's just a certain amount of stuff that, you know, they get into bevels and they get into, you know, all kinds of
rounded edges.
Oh my gosh. It's just insane, you know? And, you know, in all honesty, probably the market probably wouldn't have impacted Samsung that much if they'd have made a square device with just a little bit of rounded edges on, you know. I think it's silly, but
splitting hairs.
Yeah. You know, they're talking about how Apple considered doing a 7-inch tablet, and of course, you know, this marketing survey data that that they have to release now that the public's going to be able to see it. To me, it's just, you know, I don't get it. It seems like a lot of money being spent, and in the end, what's going to happen? Someone's going to have to write a check.
Well, also, I think if you keep in the context of what's happened here recently in this battle too, is that Samsung is now selling more phones than Apple, so. They're the number one phone maker in the world now. So Apple feels threatened by that, and Samsung wants to hang on to what they have, you know.
Well, the number of Android devices being sold are off the chart. Jeffrey, have you followed this at all, or?
Well, I've been looking at a little bit of it, and one thing that I've noticed, one thing that they've said is that they've went through the documents, and they're looking through the documents, and they found that Samsung has ideas for even doing a Retina display. So
yeah, I heard that
it's
too.
It's going to be interesting as these court documents unfold as to how much copying, and it's a little bit of copying there, but on the most part, some of the stuff is really just nitpicking.
Yeah, I don't know what the story is, to be honest with you. With the, you know, how much can they nitpick? You know, let's really think about this. You know, there's only so much changes you can make before your product's not viable anymore. And you know, if they're going to be nitpicky on a rectangle and a screen, and come on, you know, I don't know, I guess, and it's all about patents, you know, and that's where the process is really broke. And I know that there's been some legislation just introduced this past week that And it's not necessarily going after Apple as a patent troll or Samsung as a patent troll, but they're trying to go after these patent trolls that are, if they lose their attack on a company, they have to pay the company's expenses. And I think that...
Yeah, it's a battle over big dollars. You know, if one side or the other wins here, then there could be... It's really more, I think, Apple's looking to kind of rein in and get some money out of Samsung to, you know, try and get them to adhere to their patents. And it's really kind of a patent battle is what's going on here. But it is a lot of, you know, mud throwing back and forth, but it's really based on business is what's going on here. And it's nothing personal.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the same thing with the Facebook stuff. You know, Facebook was just recently settled to a $20 million class action lawsuit over pay to play and are basically paid articles. And it turns out that the people that are on the class action suit are getting no money. The lawyers are getting $10 million. A charity's getting $10 million. You know, and I was laughing about it because I've got a patent class action lawsuit settlement. I got it in the mail here, and I just like to show this off. It's from Hansen versus Google, settlement administrator. I got a big check, guys. This is this will buy me a soda. 46 cents.
No, I won't buy you a
score.
Soda.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking about this. Okay, I got a business account. Probably cost me more to deposit this check than it will to. You know, but you know, my whopping 46 cents here that I got for my Google settlement fund, whatever. And I have no idea which class action lawsuit I was under, but, and I have to deposit the check by 12:20 or it's void. So
oh, boy, tear it up now.
Yeah. You don't want any of that money. You think you just wonder where that money goes after they, the lawyers collect that too. Administrative fee.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Facebook thing, basically a lot of people that were on that class action lawsuit have submitted briefs to the judge and saying, hey, you know, this is Google admitted wrongdoing and they've settled. Now, how come the court papers are being redacted on what they revealed? And so Facebook may end up in the value may end up being that we find out what each Facebook account's worth and how much we generate, because that was information that had to be disclosed in that trial. And if they get that out, it's just going to be like Apple having to release this this user survey data. And that kind of data to analysts is just fantastic and makes, you know, all of your everyone kind of go, you know, and especially just like a little bit of a morsel there to chew on.
Yeah.
So, hey, AT&T's is ending its 2G network in 2017. So I'm sure there's probably not a lot of people left on 2G, but they said about 12% of its total wireless customers, or roughly 8.4 million people, were still using 2G handsets at the end of June, and they're going to try to get them all swapped over, but still 5 years out, but I'm sure that's network they want to bandwidth that they want to, or frequency spectrum they want to reutilize for new technology.
Yeah. So there goes my HTC 8125.
Like you were using it anyway, right?
Yeah, it's sitting on my shelf. But I could have used it if I wanted to.
It's an antique now. Yeah.
Now, one thing I saw yesterday on Engadget that I was actually contemplating on buying was, and if you've got a Google TV, you don't need this, but Google has launched, not Google, Logitech has launched what's called the new TV Cam HD for living room video chats.
And yeah, I saw this. Yeah.
It's got built-in Skype, 720p, $200, basically just plug it in. You have to connect to your Wi-Fi network. Then you log into your Skype account, and right there, kids can talk with grandma. But, you know, if you're going to spend that money, buy a Google TV and you can do the same thing. So long as you buy the camera accessory, You can do the same exact thing in your living room and have a more capable device. So, but I guess this is Skype for Dummies. And the $199 hooks up to your TV, and it's kind of funny. I was watching the product demo, and this guy, you can tell he's reading a script. He's looking at the camera, but he's also he can hardly keep from moving his head. But they probably should have just had him off camera and demoed, because it was a little bit distracting. Big face in the graphics, and then you can see his old eyeballs reading as he's reading the script. But do you think these types of devices are going to help grandma and those folks that are not technically inclined?
I'm honestly a little skeptical. I'm just not so sure that people think of using their TV like this. I think it's a market that doesn't necessarily exist. But you know, they're spending money creating a product here, so I mean, there must be a need out there. But I have the impression that most people want to watch TV with their TV and not do voice or video calling. But that's just me.
Well, one thing that we see here is that, you know, we're so far away from grandparents you know, this is where it's used for us. Basically, I'll Skype up my mom, and my mom is on her laptop. And
there you go.
Yeah, now she's got a Google TV as well, but it just seems easier for her to use her laptop than to use Google TV, because she never just can kind of quite figure out what's going on with Google TV in their system. But she just Skypes in, and everyone's free to just kind of chit chat, and they can show antics and, you know, demonstrate the latest dance moves and all that stuff to grandma. So it works out good. Now, I think from my mother-in-law's point of view on the grandmother in Japan, she will, and it's more the sisters than her. She doesn't like to, the computer technology is a little overwhelming. So if it wasn't for the sister being there to activate it wouldn't happen. But
plus, also, I think people are going for larger TV screens these days, and you sit further back from those kind of screens, and I wonder if these cameras are going to be capable of zooming in on people that are talking, instead of you know having a wide room shot where there's little tiny people in the room talking. So I think
actually, to answer your question, yes, there is. It comes with Logitech remote, and with the remote, you can zoom in, zoom out, or do some basic. That's what the remote says.
Yeah, I didn't see them actually demo the remote, but I know that the remote had zoom on it.
Oh, it did.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it is. It is good. So we'll have to see how this does. I'm not going to order one. I've got enough stuff here, but. it's one of those cool things. You're trying to think, how can I use this another way? You know, I was trying to think, if you had one of these and if you think about this for a second, if you had this at some event, you know, you could, like if we're doing this type of a show here, we could have someone actually call in via that onto this Skype, and we could see them at a big event. So that's where I'm thinking, okay, how can I use this in other ways and have a little nice remote, remote ability with a system. And, you know, I could do this where it actually, if you think about, you know, this would be kind of stupid, but I could actually do a remote here in the house. I could put one of these in the garage and have something going on out there. And then, remote dial via the network right into the Skype here. So, that's how I'm kind of thinking about how I would use this thing. Haven't quite come up with a justification yet to spend $200, but give me a day or two.
Yeah, I also...
Just a day or
yeah,
two?
I also wonder what the real video quality of this is. I mean, are we going to ramp up the video quality up to... you know, a little bit higher quality, because I know that these webcams typically, you know, like what we're using today are not really that high quality on the video side. I know. I've just kind of been wondering when that game is going to be upped a little bit, so the actual quality of the lenses and things like that start to get a lot better, and the whole CCD or the whole CCD sensor in there becomes more sensitive to a larger spectrum of colors and those kind of things.
Yeah, I think they're, you look at the Kinect and you look at the Logitech one that comes for Google TV. That camera's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And so I guess time will tell, but I just thought this was a nice moving on here. Someone in the chat room says, someone said in the chat that their Google settlement check was for 12 cents. So.
Bubblegum.
Hey, you should go in together and get something.
Yeah, we could put those together, 58 cents. We might, who knows? That's what you do. You basically have people, second party, sign over Google settlement checks. You know, that could be a business in itself just for fun.
Yeah, I don't think you can even buy anything for 12 cents anymore.
Buy penny gum.
Yeah, there you go.
That's pretty much it.
All right, first broadcast TV phone appears on Metro PCS. I'm thinking, okay. So,
breakthrough.
Yeah, amazing. So TV broadcasters are making their own contribution to the growing mobile video market with Dial, a service that plucks their programming out of the DTDV airways and re-renders it on a mobile phone or other small screen device. A Samsung Galaxy phone will be the first Dial device. Do we really want to watch broadcast TV on our phone?
Well, my first thought with this is that this has been done, and we got the T-shirt like 10 years ago.
That's right.
And it failed horribly in the market. I mean, not just failed a little bit, it failed horribly. And they think that they're going to bring it back again, and anybody's going to buy into it again? I don't know what they're thinking here.
Yeah, I don't
know
either.
Doesn't every phone in Japan or China have this type of service on it?
Yeah. Well, you usually have to pay extra for this. And people on their phones, they just don't, I mean, my dad had this on his phone for like 3 or 4 years. And I mean, he thought it was cool to have, but he never used it and wound up, and then the whole service got discontinued. I think it was on Verizon or something like that for a long time.
And my girlfriend has a Sprint phone, and she has a special feature where she can watch different TV shows on different channels because she doesn't have cable at her place. She'll actually watch like an episode of Mythbusters or something like that on her phone, no different than you would Netflix or an Amazon or anything like that. I don't know if it does live TV as it goes.
Yeah,
but
it's live.
But there is functionality, and there are, I see people that do use it, especially those who aren't in a place where they can use their regular Wi-Fi to get or TV to get any type of TV show or program that they want to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I think Google, this is just, to me, I think it's just overkill and a little bit too late. It is big in Asia, but my wife's sisters have it all on their phones and I never see them use it. Yeah. Maybe the folks in Tokyo, they're on the train or something, use it, but video has to be consumed they're on worse bandwidth restrictions than we are. I don't know. Of course, it comes with an antenna. So, you pull the antenna out and it's just
I mean it would be cool if they actually built in a little DVR into this thing so you could record live TV in here and then watch it on demand later or something like that. I think that's an interesting idea, is to have a DVR built into your phone. But anyway,
yeah, it's Anyway, so I'm sure this is going to sell really good, but boy, they're really excited about it. I tell you the I tell you the product that I am excited about, and I was raving about this earlier in the week and so forth, is talking about Google Fiber in Kansas City. I'm blown away by this. They're saying that more than 7,000 households have already pre-registered for the new broadband service, while 23% of designated fiberhoods have cleared the hurdle for installation as well. And Google says that they can reach nearly 50% of the Kansas City, Kansas market. But it's also Kansas City, Kansas and Kansas City, Missouri. So there's 46 designated neighborhoods, and their free service is cheaper. I mean, their free service is faster than what I have hooked up right now in my connection here. So, you know, I think Google's smart in the free offering, because they're going to go into neighborhoods that are, and every city has neighborhoods that are not as, should we say it? They're a rougher area. They're different economic base, and sure. If people can come up with the $200 or $300 it costs to get this installed, and get the free, I think they've got a huge win here. And this has got to be a game changer.
Plus, they've coined a new term here, fiberhood. I think it's a catchy thing,
Yeah.
I'm going to get fiber in the hood. It's fiberhood.
Yeah.
Sounds like a TV show.
It's, you think about this for a second, and they're still figuring out the business part of it. So that isn't to be, they haven't announced business pricing yet.
Yeah.
But, if the price is right from a business perspective, I'll just have... This is the truth. You could get two or three businesses together, rent an apartment or a house, and you could put servers and all kinds of stuff in that location. And, almost have your own mini, rack system. Now, I'm sure there's going to be the business portion of this is going to be much more expensive, but...
Yeah,
the pricing on this from a household standpoint is incredible.
Yeah. Well, it's just so fast.
Yeah. And,
that's the big thing.
Now, let's be realistic. If someone hooks up with their connection to my server is only going to feed it what I allow it to be fed, the fastest speed I allow it to come out on a port.
Yeah.
It's not like the experience is going to change completely, but you definitely could have every person in the house could be on a live stream, their own, and not have to worry about, you have plenty of bandwidth left over. But $120 for a package that includes television and 1 gig internet.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I mean, incredible. Yeah. $70 if you want... And hopefully they make money, and they've got this figured out. I'm sure this is why they're doing a trial area to see what happens with this, and what would be interesting to see as they move forward and actually start turning stuff on, what their balance sheet is going to look like for this. But this has got to have Time Warners and the Coxes of the world just shaking in their boots.
Well, I think that it's possible that this effort on the part of Google will shake up the Comcast and the Coxes to start doing things a little differently than they've been doing it, being a little bit more price competitive with higher speeds and all those kind of things. Hopefully that's what the short-term benefit is that it'll force those other bigger players to change what they're doing.
For years here in Hawaii, Rob, we were stuck on the same plan. There was nothing new. We couldn't get higher speeds, nothing. And then... lo and behold, the local telco, the actual telco that has wires coming into homes for wired telephones, they decided, hey, our business model is threatened, so we need to start rolling out television and internet service. and they introduced a brand new internet offering that was faster than the local ISP, Time Warner, which is our only choice. And within days, miraculously, DOCSIS 3 was available. New higher speeds were available. I mean, overnight, you know, and for years we've been on these slower speeds, and yet the first competitor that comes to the market changed everything.
Yep. That's all it takes.
Amazing how competition works.
Yeah. If they start rolling this out to multiple cities here over the next few months, it's really going to challenge those big cable companies to start really, really looking at their businesses, because if this becomes popular, the other piece that these guys don't really have a play for that I've seen is on the phone service side. You know, it's that whole, you know, the three plan play that Comcast and things like that are playing too. So,
but don't you think it's just a matter of time for them to bring in the phone?
Yeah, well, it is, and it could be that they're moving towards, you know, everything being going over the IP. That's kind of what Comcast is doing too, but maybe, you know, having a stronger connection with wireless than like a, you know, a fiber phone line system like Comcast has.
Yeah, one of the folks said in the chat room that the secret part of the Google Fiber is going to be the citywide Wi-Fi network.
Yeah.
And if that's successful, that's big too. And, you know, it's just Kansas City did a good job in promoting them as the city to bring Google Fiber to. And I think that it's going to be big. Someone says, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, a beautiful day in the fiberhood. Won't you be mine? So singing Dr. Rogers. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Fiber.
Well, and the other piece of this too is how open is this platform or this cable system to other folks like, you know, like Xboxes or Microsoft or Apple systems or those kind of things. Is there going to be anything proprietary about it, right?
Well, I think they're already thinking it is, because they've already got boxes you have to get with them. It's not like you can't bring your own fiber router to the party. And that's what I would be like. Of course, you know, most people don't want to buy a fiber router anyway. They're expensive. But, you know, if you have the means to, you can buy a Cisco fiber router for $1,000. And, you know, you would be, you know, you'd guaranteed you'd have good bandwidth. But I'm sure there's some packet forming or whatever they're going to do. And there'll be congestion. Yeah. There's going to be some challenges with it. But I think in time, whatever they've come up with is going to be good. So we'll see what happens with this. But the package that they're giving is incredible, and makes you wish you were living in Kansas City, Kansas, or Kansas City, Missouri.
No.
From a bandwidth standpoint, I've been to Kansas City. Kansas City's not that bad. Come on now. On the Missouri side, it's a little better than the Kansas side. So. But
no mountains there. It's all
it's not. As long as you stay, keep your distance from the river. That's important too. All right, let's switch here and let's talk about the word we can't say no more. Rob, how come I can't say metro?
You know, it's actually a very good question. I had it kind of thrown in front of me this past week. There's a podcast that's called the Metro Developer Show, that I got an urgent email from them saying I have to change my show title and my art and all that stuff, and it came like within 24 hours of this change. And it's like there really isn't any information about why they had to do this.
So the show actually announced they had to change too.
Yeah, I mean, so this show is actually done by a guy that works on kind of developer relations for Microsoft. So and then he sent me an email saying, you know, I've got to change all my branding and my show right away. So it's a pretty popular, you know, Windows developer show now. I thought it was really interesting what happened with that. So I don't have any answers, and I don't think really anybody else does.
Well, it's pretty sick here. You've got to get a company that has a trademark in Europe.
Yeah.
And, you know, you would think that Microsoft would have went to that company early on and said, hey, you know, we're going to license this. And here's your check. But, you know, can a company... So here's the problem that I have with all this stuff. You know, a trademark is really, you're only infringing when there can be confusion. So if you have a company that's providing a service and you have software that is part of his acronym is Metro, you know, those two are not synonymous. You know, though there's enough separation of church and state there, you would think that there would not be an issue.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's really the litmus test is can someone be confused, you know, that, and because, you know, it's just like App Store, you know, that's the big battle going on now that Apple wants to control, but if they're having to change this, then what is it going to be just Windows 8?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I haven't really heard any guidance on this, but, I'm sure that people will continue to use that name as a reference to that design area. It's just not going to be an officially supported name from a company perspective. It's kind of what I think is going to wind up happening with this.
It says, Microsoft reveals a discussion with an important European partner led to the decision to discontinue the use of the Metro branding of Windows 8 and other Microsoft products, one that employees must adhere to immediately.
Yep.
So that's a pretty incredible. That's a pretty big gaffe. Yeah. I'd hate to say it.
Well, I don't know. I think in the big picture, I think it's going to be forgotten about pretty quick.
Yeah. That's.
I mean, once Windows 8 comes out, everybody's going to be focused on
Windows 8.
Next kind of UI experiences with Windows, and that whole Metro thing kind of fades into the background, I think.
Well, you know, the final copy of Windows 8, as soon as it was RTM'd, of course, it was immediately put up on the peer-to-peer networks. And that's not surprising. It's, you know, that's what you would expect. And, of course, been lots of screenshots. Of course, I don't think there's going to be any surprise on what Windows 8 looks like. I'll be honest with you. I've graded from Lion to Mountain Lion. And the change in my... That was a big update. That was really full of new features, and I could really tell the change. And
no.
I mean, it was like, why did I even update? It's like I don't even really notice the. I guess I'm not a power user, and I don't understand the subtleties of the change. But I'm going to tell you, when someone updates to Windows 8, they're going to be like, "Whoa!" If they haven't been reading the blogs. You know, to go to this as a start page, I have a feeling, though, that for me is going to last about 15 minutes. And I'm going to go in there and dig in the preferences to get back my normal standard desktop. I'll have to try it and see if I like it. But I don't know. I still have my reservations on this.
Well, it's a big change. I mean, I think that's what everybody needs to really keep in mind here. I've got it running on a second laptop in my office, and I think it's just such a big change. And I think the company's really making a big bet for the future here. I'm sure there is going to be some folks that are, you know, that want to use a regular desktop experience, kind of like what, you know, Windows 7 is today, and they're going to see this and go, this is a big change, right?
Yeah.
But I think that the core functionality of the desktop experience is there. All they really did, I mean, well, I shouldn't say all they really did. The whole operating system has been totally revamped. But the whole start experience is still there. You know, it's just a different user experience. It's more like these live tiles thing.
Yeah.
And I just think, I mean, most of the people that I know that have been using this for a long time, they go through this phase, right, where they're frustrated because things aren't where they're used to things being, right? It's not as it doesn't fit into their normal workflow right out of the gate because of what they're used to with the Windows experience up to this point. But what happens, you kind of learn a new flow, and I think in the long run, people are going to be moving a little bit more away from the desktop kind of experience and doing kind of a new way of doing things. And I think it's just going to take time, but there's going to be some frustration along the way. But I think it's just a matter of getting through that phase and getting to the point where, okay, well, this is a new experience and ultimately a better experience. And as you think of it more as kind of like a touch experience first versus a mouse experience, I think you can start to see why they're going this direction, because they want to move towards more natural user interfaces, touch experiences, gesture, all that kind of stuff as the core, and this user experience better fits in that world. So,
hey Jeffrey, you know, I know you're a Mac user primarily, but I think you've got Windows loaded in the background. What's your thought on Windows 8?
Well, I haven't really gotten a chance to play with it too well, too much, but I am a Windows user. I will switch to Windows 8. I'll play with it and see what it does. I'll probably be like you. I'll get tired of the tile system and go back to a regular desktop start button situation, because that's how I've worked for many years. So I just I don't know. We'll see what happens. It could be a marking of change for Microsoft, but then again, it could be the full downfall and another Windows Vista or Windows ME.
One of the folks in the chat room says, think about those screens, how they're going to look like lined up in a Best Buy opposite a bunch of static iPads. So, you know, that is an interesting thought, because they're going to be active and updating, and if they can figure them a little different, it could be quite the slideshow. Now, you know, Rob, this is going to, you're going to laugh here. You know that for years I was primarily a Windows house. Yeah. You know that, when I started this show in 2004, there was nary a Mac in the studio. We ran for a number of years. Now, the only time what got me started on using a Mac is I had to buy a Mac Mini when I was writing my book on podcasting, because I just didn't know anything about Mac and I had to buy one. And then a couple of years later, when the first Intel based MacBook Pro came out, that was the first year I ever bought a MacBook Pro. So, you know, up to this point, everything in the studio has been running really PC centric, you know, and so this spring I started by making some changes. First thing I did was, when we updated the machines that you guys are on right now, I went from Windows XP to Mac Minis. And just because of the space savings and being able to, you know, they're pretty low power usage. And then when I was getting ready to, I used to have a laptop that used to sit right here that fed my secondary stream to Ustream and also act as an audio streamer. So I basically had it doing the Shoutcast stuff. So, you know, my wife come in here a month or so ago and she says, you have got to get this stuff, because I had it on the floor basically on a box, and she says, you have got to get stuff off the floor, up underneath the shelf, you got to get stuffed away, you know, because the studio is part of home. And she says, this is, you know, she gave me the eye, you know, and yes dear. So I basically went and purchased another Mac Mini to solve that final issue. And so, you know, I look at the lineup here, and I've got the audio machine here that is a Windows machine running Adobe Edition. It's a recorder. Basically, it's a dedicated machine that does just that from Sweetwater. I've got the TriCaster that is doing the video stream today. And then I have, directly in front of me, I've got a Windows machine that I use for my motif of, you know, reviewing articles and so forth. But
so
everything...
Yeah, so doesn't the TriCaster run Windows too?
Yeah, it does run Windows. So yep. So what I'm really down to is 1, 2, 3 machines that are Windows. And now on the Mac side, I'm essentially an even Steven house. I've got, you know, 3 Mac Minis underneath here that are running studios. Now I've got a MacBook Pro that I use for video editing on the road, but I don't really use it here in the studio, but I am up one. I'm a 4-3 family now, as far as in the studio goes. And I just kind of like think about that. I actually wrote an article about it the other day. I was like, huh. But what's weird is it's still my heavy lifting is done on Windows. These are kind of like support machines, for a better word. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that I bought the minis was because of the lower power usage. And I can basically, I bought the very lowest end model for the one that's doing the shoutcast and backup video stream. And it basically is IVNC into it in order to control it. So it's not even really hooked up to a monitor per se. I think I do have it hooked up to a monitor, but IVNC to get into it, usually I don't even have to use a monitor. But I've become this agnostic, so it's funny, it's how times have changed, but I still find myself doing most of my heavy lifting on a Windows machine. And the upgrade to Mountain Lion was less than impressive, and it was worth about $20.
It wasn't impressed with me. I crashed my whole hard drive.
Oh, so your hard drive died when you updated?
Yep. It went all the way through the update system and said, it's okay to go. I rebooted the system.
And it goes
completely gone.
Really?
Really? Wow. Yeah.
Were you able to recover?
A little bit.
So I've never experienced a Mac die on me. And so I have a time capsule here. So I'm assuming there's a process. I don't even, to be honest with you, I'd have to go read. I know how to recover a Windows machine, but I don't know how to, I wouldn't even know how to start to recover a Mac.
With Windows 7, it's actually very easy. All you have to do is go to the backup. You go to the start button, you type in backup, and then in backup, there's an option that says create a system image, and you can just create the system image from there. For Mac, to backup the whole Mac, you have to reboot the Mac in the recovery mode using the disk. And then go into the disk utility and create an image that way. So, but both of them can have images created.
Well, I do mine on I use Time Capsule. So I'm assuming that I would boot and connect to Time Capsule and pull the recovery down on the Mac. But I think about that. Do I have everything on? I'm reading the chat room here. I don't know. I guess something I should look into. I've been, knock on wood, I've been pretty lucky of having hard drives not burn on the Macs, but it's probably just a matter of time.
Hey, are you guys both using more and more cloud services?
Yeah, Rob, I find myself using, like, we're streaming today on Amazon Flash Media Server in the cloud. So from that perspective, yes, Raw Voice uses, we have an extensive number of servers on AWS to the tune of, I think my bill every month is a couple of grand.
I'm not so much talking about like hosting that kind of stuff. I'm talking about like SkyDrive and Dropbox, that kind of stuff.
Oh, I personally don't use Dropbox. Mm-hmm. I do. I have an account, but I don't think I actually have used it in a long time. Jeffrey, how about you?
I have the free Dropbox account. I use Amazon Cloud for music and some movies. Now that the Amazon Instant Video app is on the iPad, now I can watch some movies straight from the iPad, which is what I'm really happy about. I do have an iCloud, and I do have Microsoft's, what do they call that, SkyDrive for the phone. Yeah. That's as for other services, I do have other cloud services, but as a whole, I don't have one big 100-gigabyte cloud drive sitting anywhere.
I do use Google Docs, and we actually started using Google Sites recently to do some, basically we're, sketching stuff out. Mm-hmm. I do use Carbonite for my backup of a couple of machines. So I guess from that perspective, I'm using cloud, but I also use Windows Home Server too. So I have an on-site and off-site backup.
I have Drobo, so that that does that for me. Backs up.
So as you guys look into the future, you know, especially Todd, if you start thinking about the trying to replace the Windows Home Server as a, you know, a network backup scenario, where do you see the best place to replace that right now?
You know, I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to buy OEM Windows Home Servers for now until into the future. Then when it's and then when they quit doing that, then I'm going to have to upgrade to hopefully something else that'll support me in the home. Because, you know, Rob, I've had two Windows machines die, blue hard drives. I mean, screen just went black. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, so long as you're my Windows Home Server now sits in the garage in a case. Basically is in shutdown mode all the way up until midnight. It wakes up at midnight. From midnight to 5 a.m., it basically pulls the machines that are online. It downloads and does the update or does the backup. And when I had this machine spin a hard drive, and I keep a laptop and a SATA drive here at all times. I have two that are just in a wrapper. I popped the hard drive out, put a new hard drive in, booted the machine with the recovery disk, and I was literally back up to even Steven in about an hour. And yeah, it lost a little bit of work from that day, but you know, if you have more than one Windows machine or two or three, I'm going to tell you Windows Home Server is the way to go. I'm a big fan now, but I do use Carbonite because the reason I'm worried about that, or let's say God forbid I have a fire and it takes out my local storage. Well, then at least everything else is in the cloud from the, but it takes too long to pull down from the cloud to recover a machine.
Yeah.
You know, I literally pulled 120 across my 1 gig Ethernet network here in the house to rebuild this machine, and it was, you know, it just, like I said, about an hour.
Yeah.
And you couldn't pull 120. Go ahead.
That I'm using, it's kind of like a creeping thing, but I'm finding that I'm using SkyDrive more and more. And especially at work, you know, I'm running the new office, and it's got the whole SkyDrive built into it. You know, I can save documents directly to my SkyDrive, and then I've got, you know, I've got all the SkyDrive software installed on on my phone and on my PCs now, and it just adds. It's almost like a, you know, it's like another hard drive on the system, and it's just, I'm starting to actually use it a lot more. But I'm trying to find a, you know, a good thing to move to beyond the Windows Home Server, if there is anything. I mean, I could still keep using that. I think the server 2013 does have a version, but it's like $450 or something like that. That will mostly replace. You know, it's going to be pretty expensive. I think it's called was it server?
Yeah, 2013.
Like Essentials or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
And so that's the one that I'm looking at moving to, and I can see some combination with SkyDrive with that somehow is probably going to be pulled together. But I've got, you know, tens of terabytes of data here I want to back up to the clouds somewhere offsite, and I have a hard time finding a good place to actually do that.
Yeah, I haven't looked at SkyDrive yet, so I'm assuming that comes when you update Office.
Yeah, it's actually separate client software that you have to install on all your devices. And I believe you can get it on the Apple platform as well.
How's yours worked out, Jeffrey, using SkyDrive?
For the most part, what I do with SkyDrive is, whereas I could have, with the iPhone, I could have just went into Google Plus and moved pictures over that way. I use SkyDrive to just when I take a picture, I'll put it up on SkyDrive. And then I'll go over to the computer and pull it from there, so I can use it for a blog post or something like that. I haven't used SkyDrive past that functionality.
Does it automatically go up? Do you have to tell it to go?
Yeah, you basically you click on it and then you, you tag it and then you post. You say if it's public or if it's private and then you post it up.
I think the cloud thing works better from Apple, but it just goes. You know, I think that is one thing. It's smart what Apple has done.
Yeah. Well, I can definitely see some advantages to that. I know on my phone, I can take photos on my phone and those automatically get sent up to the SkyDrive.
Gotcha.
I don't have, I mean, they're always backed up on SkyDrive. And I agree with you. I think if other parts of, you know, what we do on our computers automatically just stores up there, I think that's the long-term answer. But it's also about capacity too. I mean, I think my SkyDrive account's only 25 gigs right now.
Uh-huh.
And I need so much more than that if right. I'm going to use that as really any kind of a primary drive.
Well, I want to switch topics here, guys, and talk a little bit about, I don't know if we talked about this the last time we were together or not, but how many of you have been following this this conversation that's been going on with Dalton Caldwell? Have you guys seen this conversation with him?
With what?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
Okay, well, let me bring up a screen and show the audience too. Dalton, he basically earlier, he's for the last past two or three weeks, he has been writing some very aggressive blog posts that talk about transparency for developers on platforms like Twitter and Facebook. And and the crux of this was he went to Facebook. He was getting ready to launch a product that was similar to App Center. And of course, and Facebook hadn't announced it yet, and he'd been working on this for a while, and he went to this executive meeting with executives Facebook, and Facebook basically said, listen, we don't want you competing. We want to do an acquisition hire so that you can help us build App Center. And this was after they had basically decided not to develop for Twitter because Twitter was, you know, basically saying now they don't want stuff built. They want stuff built into Twitter, not outside. And you know, so this whole app developer relationship with these vendors has gotten to the point of being contentious because they're basically a bunch of Indian givers. They, you know, they say one thing and do a different thing. And I don't know if that's a politically correct term, but that's my best analogy to use to say is, you know, we want you to build into our platform. And then 2 years later, oh, sorry, we don't need you anymore. Yeah. And so Dalton is a pretty well-known developer. He's done a couple of successful startups in, I guess, well, he's a serial entrepreneur. I don't know if he's had successful startups. But he basically wants to build a Twitter replacement that is open and no ads and that what truly people can build into. And he's trying to raise some money. And I've ponied up and joined what's called the app.net real-time social media feed without the ads. I'm like, gosh, I'm switching here. And So far, only 2,100 people have come in and they're short of their goal. They got 9 days left to make $500,000, and I don't think they're gonna make it. I hope they do, but they've done an early release of the first build, and really what they're doing here is they're going after Twitter in a big way. And let me roll this down. Let me show you some pictures here that were on VentureBeat. So ultimately what it is they are upset. They want, you know, some, and I will be getting an account here to this soon. And I know that this is, you know, you think about having a Twitter replacement, but you know, the challenge has been is developers are scared. They're scared to develop for these, products and services now because of these policy changes being made by companies midstream.
Well, I think that the risk is building your whole business around somebody else's business, I think is where the risk really comes into. I mean, really relying on these APIs from these other bigger platforms is where the risk is. I mean, Yeah, I have been following this broader story. I didn't recognize his name for some reason. But yeah, he posted in there that he was he posted a letter to Mark Zuckerberg about you know, this whole experience that he had, and all these web-based platforms are starting to build like app kind of platforms, and even Twitter, I think, is that's the direction people, these companies want people to build into their applications, right, not build outside of their applications.
Exactly.
And that's a really fascinating trend. So you have this app thing that's going on around Apple's platform and Windows and Android. But then there's this whole app ecosystem trend around web-based platforms. And you know, it's an interesting trend. And I'm wondering, so have you thought about the implications of that, Todd?
I have. You know, we talked about it a lot. And, you know, and for our, you know, we don't have a big, how should we say it? I don't have a big stake in the game because we're mostly in set-top boxes and they want us there. So I'm not so worried about this. But, you know, I thought it was interesting what Google said, and it was specifically Google's Vic Gundotra, and I probably pronounced his name incorrectly. Yeah. Gundotra. Mm-hmm. Gundotra. How did, do you guys know how to spell or how to pronounce Vic's last name? But anyway, he's a big gun over there. And Vic, if I pronounced your name wrong, I apologize. But he exclaimed that he's not interested in screwing over developers as he piled on top of Dalton Caldwell's post accusing Facebook of being naughty on the platform front. He says, I'm not here to defend Facebook or Twitter or anyone else who takes lumps in Dalton's blog, but Vic's opportunity post warrants a little scrutiny. So, you know, but Google has a little bit of explaining to do too. You know, Google Plus, you can pull out of Google Plus, but you can't push to Google Plus yet.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, they've got some challenges. They've depreciated SOAP. They've depreciated their translation API. They've depreciated tables and record feeds. They depreciated lots of APIs. So, you know, there's things that Google has done as well. They can say what you will, that they're not trying to, you know, they say, oh, we're not going to screw over developers, but come on, you know, you put out these APIs and then later, we're going to pull that feature back.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, I'm concerned about where this space is heading. And you know what it is? It's all driven by money. So this is what Dalton has said. Listen, I need $500,000 for the year to get this up off the ground, develop it, build it. We're going to make all the API open. Everyone that pays is going to be able to, basically, it is going to be a pay-to-play platform for developers. I don't mind paying to play when I know that the rules are set and I'm not going to get screwed over by doing development time. And there's going to be issues with any platform you're on. But I think this is big. I think, you know, I think at some point, the people, the developers, have to take the internet back.
Yeah.
And okay, business still has to happen. But as a collective, I think we can work together as a collective to make things happen, still enjoy economic success, and not be held hostage. You know, what are we held hostage to today? And I shouldn't say held hostage. What do we use? Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus. You know, that's where the majority of the social message is. And anyone that says any different, okay, the other services are small percentages, right?
Well, my comment on this is it too late to do this? I mean,
maybe.
I mean, I think that, you know, these platforms have gotten so big and have so many users now that, I mean, it may not be too late, but it sure feels like that the whole momentum behind all this stuff is so well established now. I mean, it feels like it's a 80% scenario, not a 20% scenario. I mean, it's like there's such a small gap left that hasn't been captured by these big platforms that it's going to be an uphill climb to get support for this because of the economics of it, right? I mean, and where all the attention is today.
But if you get a number of devs that start billing to this, and you know you got 2,100 people that have contributed to that, are all those programmers? Probably not. But you know, if it's going to take time, but if people start understanding that maybe this platform will not, or hopefully, well, let's set the ground rules. I don't know all the ground rules. If the ground rules are set that we're not going to sell this data back to other vendors, and you know, there's certain things set on privacy and all this other, you know, it could make people go, you know, I talked about a story earlier this week where a father went to Target and was raising, oh man, he was pissed. And he went to the manager, why are you sending my daughter those coupons for diapers and formula and all this other stuff? And he was pissed. And then the manager's like, because his teenage daughter, why are you sending this to her? And it turns out his teenage daughter was pregnant, and Target figured it out before the parents did, by data on what she was buying at Target and lotions and different types of signals that she had sent. So when people start getting sick and tired of being spied on so much, maybe things will change. Maybe people become so numb to it, they don't care.
Yeah.
So Jeffrey, you know, I know that you use a lot of the social media sites. I don't know if you're familiar with all the stuff going on with Dalton or not, but you know, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, I'll tell you something. And when you mentioned it, that was the first time I kind of heard about this whole thing. So I haven't been on the ball on this. As you guys were talking, I'm reading through this. There's a lot of questions. The first thing I look at is 161,000 of 500,000 has been obtained. They've got 9 days left to go. The odds are completely against him that he's going to get completely funded on this project. So I don't see that happening. But if it does happen, it doesn't. I'm not wrapping my brain around the business model that they're going to pay for somebody's going to pay for a social network.
The developers
to use
are.
And create and be part of. Because it just doesn't. I can't wrap my brain around it. It's been tried before. It didn't work. The closest you get to something like this is Yammer, and Microsoft ended up buying that anyway.
But just remember, this is not for users paying. This is so devs can pay and not get locked out. This is so companies can play on the platform and not get locked out of the API. Not get told midstream, oh, we're removing this feature. You can't do this anymore. They're basically providing the Twitter-esque-like site, and then you can build what you want to that. And it's true, though. It's like Rob said, it's the whole ability to be able to get people to move.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is like an open ID of app development.
Well, what it is, it's an open Twitter.
Yeah.
Which, man, that's a steep hill to climb.
It's steep. Well, it's true.
Yeah.
And if we can figure out how to make it work, real time social feed not driven by ads is worth real dollars to a lot of people.
Yeah, it'd be nice to think that the open web is still a viable concept. I would like it to be, but I'm just not. I think maybe it's too late.
It might be. My hope is that I'm able to, not have to worry about being locked out. Yeah. You look at the Roku platform. In our contracts we make with companies we build Roku app for, we cannot guarantee that their channel is going to get approved.
Yeah.
You know, so you're going to spend this money to have this development done, and then it's just like the App Store. You know, I think they've pretty much gotten that hammered out, but you still aren't guaranteed that your app's going to get approved. If someone at Apple doesn't like it, you're out. So
that's true. I don't know. I'm thinking sustainability at that point. I mean, even if he does get the $500,000, what does that mean? Does that mean that he's got 6 months worth of
basically what it means is they've got the money to build the platform. And you know, I think the challenge then is then you got to have the companies, the groups that have put in the money behind this to come in and build apps on top of it. You know, that's the only way it's going to succeed. That's how Twitter succeeded. Was people built apps around it. And so we'll see. All right, let me switch gears here. And I just saw something so cool on the net. Some dude has spent 2 years building a life-size working Wall-E. You guys remember Wall-E? From the movie?
Well, Wall-E from the movie?
Yeah. So here he is. Someone built a real life one. And so anyway, that just this robotics guy, and he had built a R2D2 before, but this guy spent some time, and I thought cool, and fully functioning, does all the things it's supposed to do. But hey, one non-tech article here before we really wrap up today. And I think I've got one more in the stack here, but, you guys, putting in some extra groceries.
all I can say is I'm planning to grow all my own food.
I'm a farm boy at heart. As I grew up as a farm boy, I have, most of my childhood friends are farm boys, and I'm here to tell you, you know, I don't think the news is giving this enough coverage. And I basically, my wife has been instructed every time you go to the grocery store, lay in extra. Now, I'm not a doomsayer. I'm just thinking it's a good financial investment to lay in more food at this point, because corn drives this country. And, you know, you're going to be surprised that the stuff that's going to go up. Crop prices are already up as much as 30% from, how much farmers are going to get when they do get whatever they get off the ground. But this is the worst drought that the United States has essentially seen in like 80 years. And do you guys ever remember stories? Do you remember reading history stories about the Dust Bowl? Do you guys remember that? You know, if we're heading into a Dust Bowl situation, I'm not worried so much about this year. I'm worried about follow-on years.
You're
bad.
In Hawaii.
Well,
you don't have to worry. Yeah.
Rob, but let's be
prices
honest.
Prices are higher.
let's be straight up. You know, what does corn feed? Beef, pork, chicken.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
It's all ground. How are cattle fed? Silage. You guys know what silage is? They chop the corn, and it's basically ground up, and they eat the stalk and everything. So buy groceries. Yeah,
Todd, I don't eat meat anymore.
Okay. So are you even more affected?
What's that?
So you're affected even more.
No. Actually,
okay.
I'm gonna like I said, I'm building my own little farm in my backyard.
Okay, so start looking at the back of all your canned goods that you buy and see what's in there.
I know what's in there.
Okay,
that's why I'm gonna start eating veggies.
So
the main problem with the drought is the fact that the ground doesn't get the proper nutrients from the from whatever's growing, because it doesn't grow properly. Yeah. Well, therefore it turns around and the next year gets harder to grow because it doesn't have all the proper nutrients in the ground. At least that's what I kind of understand.
Well, they have to fertilize every year, and they have to keep the pH balanced on the land. Yeah. But the big issue is with no water is no water, no crop. Yeah. And
this is. I think what's coming to pass here is a little bit of, there's climate change happening. It's not necessarily
Rob, we had it. We had
global warming, but it's climate change.
We had droughts 80 years ago before anyone knew what the definition of a climate change was.
Yeah, that's true.
It'll all depend on what happens next year. I'm just glad the mosquitoes are not around.
Nonetheless, climate change is just when weather patterns change in different parts of the world.
That's true.
It's not a doomsday scenario. This stuff's been going on for a long time, but nonetheless, climate is changing here in the U.S. And this is the potential. I mean, it kind of depends on this is just a 1 year scenario or is this the new normal?
I think
that's the question that I'm not sure that we really know the answer to yet.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, if things are moving in that direction and we don't know the answer to that, it could be a catastrophe.
Most people don't realize this, but we grow so much excess crops that typically we feed a large percentage of the world. We have huge grain exports. So there's going to be probably more than enough for the United States. Where it's going to be an issue is when stuff starts getting, you know, exports go down and grain is not going to be made available to other countries.
Yeah, and the overall prices of all our food goes way up. That's how it's going to have a major impact is just around pricing and availability. And I also think that areas like the Pacific Northwest are going to become more, potentially could become a more popular place to move to and live and grow food because this is where all the rain is going. And because we're getting more rain now than ever.
And if you have a season long enough, what you'll start to see is what used to be used for wood will be cleared for farmland and your whole ecosphere will be changed that way too. So it's going to be interesting to watch and we'll see how bad the grocery bill gets.
Yeah.
Hey, but last story today, got some big events coming here tomorrow. We're going to be putting a rover on planet Mars. And that happens at about 1:30 1:30 in the morning, Jeffrey's time, 6:30. I'm going to start doing a hangout tomorrow night at 6:30 Hawaiian Standard Time, which is 12:30 Eastern, 9:30 Pacific. So if you guys are awake and you guys want to come hang out, we're going to be doing a hangout and talking about what happens as the as NASA tries to crane in a rover.
So is this going to be at 9:30 in the morning Pacific time? Is that what you said?
No, it's 0030. I think is the actual time that they should get the message back, whether or not this thing has crushed itself in the planet or if it's actually on the ground, or if it's rolled over or whatever the situation may. This thing is full of risk. And if they pull this off and get this thing on the ground, I will, you know, they'll deserve major kudos. But I think the chances of a failure are, I think they had a 50-50 chance of pulling it off. I hope they get it on the ground, but it's, you know, you guys have watched the video looking this thing in, right?
Yeah.
You know,
it's like a floating crane kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right?
So what do you guys think? You think they're going to be able to do it?
I think that the only big variable that I could see is just wind velocity at you know, just above ground level.
And also how clear it is if they land this thing on a boulder. Yep. Or...
Yeah. But I'm sure that, they've worked out all the different scenarios, I'm sure.
Yep.
I wouldn't surprise me if they pull it off.
I wouldn't be surprised either, but boy, I would not want to be the mission guy that's in charge of. Well,
it's gonna be some tense moments.
Yeah, it will be, and I think
from when that process is initiated and when they actually hear word back because of the kind of distance delay.
Yeah. But NASA. It'll
be interesting.
Go ahead.
So do you know, is there going to be any live video?
Yeah, it'll be on Ustream and a variety of different places as well. So I have to be careful not to restream the Ustream stuff. So We're going to be up and hang out and just chatting about it, and then kind of all of us can be watching separately. So
I thought that's all public feed anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to be careful with that. Ustream is being a little funny about some of this stuff.
Yeah, I think I heard that there might be a live stream of it on Xbox Live too.
Oh. I believe it'll be on NASA TV. You'll be able to go to their website directly as well. So it'll be a lot of places. But NASA did also review they made three new agreements. It totals $1.1 billion in funding for new commercial spaceships to launch American astronauts to space. So they announced that yesterday, and that's a big deal. The three companies that were announced, and this is kind of makes me laugh. So here in Nevada Corporation, SNC, headquartered in Louisville, Colorado. And Space Exploration Technology, SpaceX. We know about SpaceX. And, of course, Boeing. So you got two companies, Sierra Nevada and Boeing, that got cash. And then the one that I think has the biggest chances of doing huge business is SpaceX. Now, it's funny, you know, I've got a story about SpaceX. When I was in the Navy, and this was, oh, my gosh, let me think about this. This was 84 to 87. I did school in 88. So I went to California in late 88 to 91. Yeah. So in somewhere between 88 and 91, I was flying C-12s out of Lemoore, California. And we would go over to, there's a big air traffic control system where SpaceX has their headquarters in Hawthorne. And so we would go over there once in a while. One of the guys would have to get a check ride or something, and that's where we would pick up a FAA guy or something. But I visited space before it was SpaceX. I can't remember what it was called. They had a composite. They were building composite aircraft there at the time, and I got to meet all these guys now that are inaccessible. Walked in the hangar, talked these. You know, it was really cool. If I'd known then what I know now, you know, like, hey, can I give you $100 for a stock, you know, for a share? But I think Rutan and all those guys were all in. They were doing incredible stuff in the 80s. And it does not surprise me at all what they're doing with SpaceX. And so we'll see where this leads. But anyway, it's a commercial lift capability in private company's hands. But again, Boeing is in their big Nevada Corporation. They're both huge defense contractors as well. But SpaceX is the only kind of true one that's not. But anyway, I thought I would talk about that a little bit. But we'll see what happens tomorrow with the Mars rover, Curiosity.
Yeah, it'll be quite the drama.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, guys, did you guys see anything this past week that was like, whoa?
I'm surprised we didn't talk about Verizon and the tethering issues.
Their $1.25 million got their hand whacked, and now you don't have to pay the $20 for the tethering?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's smart. Hey, I want to show
Other than that.
I want to show you guys something. This surprises me. Let's see if it comes up as an ad again. Will it show it on this page? Maybe not. When I loaded space.com, I've been having trouble with my in-ear headset. So I was pricing yesterday, Shure, basically in-ear headsets. I was pricing them out. And guess what ad I'm being presented on the space.com website? An ad for a Shure full-range earphone. It's the exact model that I was looking at last night. Boy, it's nothing on sale. Just a little ad there in my face saying, hey, Todd, you still need those Shure earphones for $199?
Contextual advertising. It's happening.
That's it. So they definitely know what we're doing out here. But
so have you guys been following the Facebook stock drama that's going on also?
Yeah, my one share of Facebook dropped.
Yeah, I think it dipped down to 1999 at one point, and then it popped back up to like, I don't know, what, 21, 22. But it's kind of interesting watching that. I mean, I know that they're coming up on a window here in the next couple months where, you know, a lot of the executives can sell off big chunks of their holdings.
Yep.
And I wonder if we're going to see a big drop in market valuation when that date hits.
As so, people unload.
Yeah. And plus I've heard there's quite a few of the bigger kind of stock analysts that have a target price, a buy target price at like $18.
Wow.
And so I kind of wonder if once that happens, the stock price will dip because of all of the sales, and then right after that, it'll spike up, starting at about $18.
As the way they like to manipulate the stock market, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. Did you guys hear earlier in the week about this automated trying buying program? This from this Knight Capital. Did you guys hear about this story?
I didn't hear about this.
No. Yeah, Knight Capital had a program that went rogue on them, and for about 45 minutes, things went crazy. And you guys are going to laugh because Wizard was one of the stocks that was getting bought by this automated program. So they went from like $3 to, of course, they did a 12-for-1 reverse split, and basically so their stock was, I think it was like 20 cents or something like that, and they went to 240 when after it was reversed, and they're finishing up this Chinese company acquisition, so they're Chinese owned now, but or however they're owned, I don't know, I guess they own them, so they're still American owned. It's weird, but anyway, their stock went to $15. So wow. Yeah, because of this automated trading. And the New York Stock Exchange, it was 150 stocks, but theirs was one of the five that got affected the most. And so they got the New York Stock Exchange stopped the trading anything above a certain percentage amount. And so they got a boost. Their stock went up to $4.03 from 3.40, like that. So they actually got a little push because of this changeover. So,
wow.
But yeah, it was kind of interesting to see the, because I have them on my iPhone, and I got this alert, you know, I heard this ding ding on my phone, and I looked at it, it's like $14. Who bought them? You know, I'm immediately thinking someone purchased them, and this was like 6 o'clock in the morning, and by the time I looked at the computer later in the day, they had ceased trading. But yeah, I guess it's going to cost this Knight Capital like $500 million to fix the bad buys. But yeah, the software decided it wanted to go rogue.
Well, and actually, Wizard put out a press release last week talking about their expansion into China, which I thought was really, really interesting. They see a huge growth in podcast users and content in China here over the next few years.
We see a certain amount of Chinese traffic. I wouldn't call it huge, but if you have a language show, it's good. But not English speaking shows. You know, they basically.
I don't know about that. I know, but I mean, I had I think the second biggest country for the Zune podcasts here was China.
Well, reverse acquisition or whatever it was, Fab basically wanted access to the U.S. Stock Exchange. So, you know, there's been a lot of scrutiny put upon these types of mergers because Fab is a much bigger company, much, much bigger company than what Wizard was. And yeah. So, you know, Wizard bought them, ha, ha, ha. And, but basically yeah. it's a deal for them to be on the stock exchange. And because they're a media company, they're probably not going to be scrutinized by the stock exchange where there's been in the past, but other companies have come in and done these reverse acts to get access that have been scrutinized because there was no relationship in the company models. So Wizard wins in that they get the Chinese money. And yep. So it's kind of interesting to see how they're.
Well, if you think about it, that's 1.3 billion people that could be podcast consumers.
That's true. But it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how their priorities are over the next couple of years as new management comes in, as people are, you know, the Chinese basically take over a portion of their board. We'll see how, hopefully they won't start killing off non-profitable sectors of their business. So we'll have to see how it all boils down.
Well, from what I gathered, the core part of what they were wanting to go into partnership involved podcasting and apps.
Well, Fab has already got distribution kiosk or something like that China. So I don't know exactly what they want to do. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes for them.
Yeah.
But anyway, so looks like the Wizard is saved by the cash infusion because, you know, they had lost money for, I don't know. I don't think they ever had a profitable quarter. So how long can you burn cash like that? So hopefully that keeps them going for a while.
It does, which is good.
Yep. It's good. It keeps them in the game. That's the best, you know, that's an important thing. So, it's
good for podcasting.
Yes, it is. Yeah. We don't need any more podcasting companies going out of business. I think that's all I got. You guys got anything?
I think that's probably it.
Okay. So if people are like, we're out of here. Hey, folks, thanks for hanging out with us. Definitely come over to geeknewscentral.com and check out all the content we've got on the website. Definitely have a full host of shows over there. Saturday Morning Tech, Gadget Professor, Robot Underpants, my show that's done twice a week, of course. We live stream. We have the 24/7 audio stream that's up as well. So you can come in, and if you're not allowed to, basically sometimes you can stream audio at your work where you may not be able to actually download an audio file. So that's available for you, Shoutcast server. And, of course, all the great content at GNC as well from our writer team. And, of course, definitely check out our guest sites as well. Check out Jeffrey Powers over at Geekazine. So, Jeff, thanks for coming out today. And I know you're going out to California. I think Mike is going to be going out for that Ford Drive event as well. So
I will be out in California 15 out of the next 45 days.
So what are you doing out there?
Well, I'll be in LA for a C-Max the Ford C-Max Drive, their energy vehicle. Yep. And then I will be back the next week for VMworld. And then I will be there in the first week of September for TechCrunch Disrupt.
Oh, cool. Well, I think you'll see Mike at, I don't know which wave he's going out on. But
we coordinated.
Oh, that's cool. So Mike will be out there and be covering that as well for us. And then Rob, anything new for you?
Not at this point. We're just it's head down at work, trying to shoot for some big releases coming up here pretty soon.
No,
you might imagine.
Nothing new on the podcasting side or anything like that you can share or.
No, not at this point.
Okay, very cool. Well, we'll see what happens with the Xbox team and how they incorporate new media as they move forward. I'm not overly optimistic based on prior past performance.
What are you really saying, Todd?
Well, you know what I'm saying. All right, guys, thanks for hanging out. Everyone else, thanks for being here, and. We'll see you Sunday night on the Hangout for the hopefully landing of the Mars Curiosity rover. Everyone take care. We'll see you next time. Aloha.